proof that God doesn't exist.
God might exist. The God you believe in doesn't exist, though.
How do you know?
Because it's a contradiction.
In what way?
Does God know everything?
He might.
He might?
He might be outside of time.
No, the question was, does your God know everything?
He might.
Weird. Normally people take a pretty strong stand that their God is omniscient, but whatever.
I mean, I leave room for things to be fallible, for things to be not as I may want. They may not always fit into a box for me.
Well, what do you actually believe in then about the God you believe in?
I think there are so many misinterpretations and people who try it. I mean, too many Indians and not enough chiefs, but I guess that would be a good starting point. But there's much with a Bible, with a book that's, you know, a couple thousand years old, or let's say, you know, at bare minimum 500, 600 years old. When was the King James written? In 1514?
Well, that wasn't like the first Bible by any means, but.
Yeah, but that was the first like kind of like comprehensive, like let's put it all together. Or am I inaccurate in that?
That might be the case. I don't think the Gutenberg Bible even had an Old Testament, I don't believe, but whatever. That's not super important.
Right. Trivial. So I guess I would start with, there is so much to be interpreted, and we can't even today, when you have two people who have cohesive, strong ideas sit together and disagree on a topic, be able to agree to something. So trying to interpret a very, very, very large book that says a lot of stuff and everybody to agree on it is where I think the problem lies. But I love what you said. That you think that God might exist. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
That's fine. Yeah, I don't claim that. I don't think the Christian God exists because, again, the character in the book is just a contradiction. All you have to do is read Genesis 18. But I'm not really interested all that much in having a discussion necessarily about the Bible, because I'd rather talk about, these are like scientific things. So
right. Let's talk about the Big Bang.
Okay.
You start with, was it the second law of thermodynamics or first law? Part of the first law that says things will go from order to disorder, correct? So you'll gradually have
usable. There are many, many different ways to say that. There are shorthand, intuitive ways to say it, but usable energy decreases in a system over time is like another way it can be said, for example.
So how do we explain a Big Bang that starts off with a rapid expansion outwards in all directions, to having complex systems like the human brain and things that are definitely in more order than they were when they were just a big ball of primordial?
Because the system is the entire universe. So the system overall loses usable energy in the process. Like, for example, without the sun, it's impossible for life on this planet to exist for the most part. Although there are forms of life on this planet that don't rely on the sun. We agree so far, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the sun won't exist forever because it's losing usable energy in the process. So life is taking energy that the sun is outputting and using that energy to do work, because that's what you do with energy. There's no violation of the second law there. A very, very, very simple example I use is, you ever cook ramen noodles?
Sure.
So you can get the water to boiling and then turn the heat off. So the thing is increasing in entropy, right? But you throw your instant ramen in there and you can cook it. You can do interesting things with an initial state of high energy while the usable energy in that system is decreasing.
So I'm just curious, where do you think the energy goes? Does it just disappear? Or is it going to another form?
It goes into another form, but so there's this concept of like the heat death of the universe, which sort of like this is
fans out until
I don't have exactly the background for this, but
I already know it, so I don't want you to. Yes, I understand exactly what you're saying. I wasn't trying to be rude. If you were saying, I was trying to save you some time, but I'll shut up and let you explain it if you want to. So go ahead.
Sure. Like you were talking about thermodynamics, which says that matter and energy cannot be created or destroyed. So there goes Genesis right there too. But the total energy of the universe is zero, actually. So that energy gets transformed and the wavelengths of that energy gradually elongate. And then eventually there won't be any usable energy. Now, how can the total energy of the universe be zero, but things are happening today? I've asked physicists about this and they say, well, it kind of depends on what lens you're looking at it from. And then they say a bunch of smart things and I don't even really know. It just bounces off my head and doesn't go into my memory very well. So I'm not sure if that was a great answer to your question, but
it was a good enough answer, but I just want to adjunct to that. They don't know either. They are speculating just as much as we are. They have some very defined, salient observations that they're making and putting down on paper that are like, oh, okay, this makes sense. We can all agree on this. But when you get down to the very fundamental basis of it, they don't really understand either.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think a real physicist would. I mean, there are things that aren't known, but they can talk about things in. I mean, there's always. Well, we don't know everything yet. We're not omniscient. So, I mean, I don't know exactly what you even mean by that. But so, what are your other problems with the Big Bang? Like, do you disagree that we live in a universe that is expanding?
Do you follow Vore at all, VOR?
I stopped paying attention to him a really long time ago.
Let me ask you a question. I'll ask you the same thing. I love Blitz. Blitz and I get along. Blitz is probably the most monotone, happy-go-lucky guy scientist. He and I very, very much have opposing views and beliefs, but he handles his guests, and I'm just curious, and I'm not trying to be sarcastic about this, but the exasperation, the frustration, but yet you are the one posing a marquee, a platform for which people can come on and debate you. And instead of kind of like looking at it from a point of curiosity, you seem almost like you just don't even want to have these debates. Like someone comes up and says, hey, listen, maybe let's just tinker with the idea or think about an opposing view that might not jive with what you believe, but let's just do an exercise in futility to see where it leads. There are going to be people who have disagreeing topics than you and believe things completely contrary to what you do.
Yeah, yet, and I don't have to respect them. Do you respect Billy Carson?
I respect you until you start getting all like kind of sideways because somebody makes a statement about something that they might believe.
Do you respect Billy Carson?
I don't know Billy Carson well enough. I've seen some of his stuff. He seems to be very... I mean, I can't qualify it by saying I know him well enough to dislike him.
Well, I mean, if you listen to him, what you realize is he's completely full of shit. So,
from what it sounds like recently, yeah, that might be the case. But if you speak confidently enough about something, people tend to follow you.
Like VOR, yes.
I think he's humble and vulnerable enough when he puts his information out there.
No, not really, because he repeats the same crap that people have gone over with him ad nauseum about. That makes no sense. And the whole, oh, the Big Bang, that's perfectly compatible with the Bible because non-locality, Minecraft, simulation, and I can't remember what the other thing is. It's just a complete jumbled mess. Mark?
Can I ask you a question? Many, many philosophers argue this same point. Prove to me that you're not a brain in a vat. You can't.
That the idea that that has something to do with creationism, though, is just so silly.
It's not. It's the point that laughing at it and going, I can't disprove it, nor can I prove it, yet I'm going to snark at it like it's completely preposterous is, like, to me, befuddling. I don't laugh at the fact that I can't prove that I'm not a brain in a vat. I just go, well, shit, okay, I'm going to try and do the best with the information that I have at hand and make sense of it, accepting the fact that this could be just me making all this shit up. There's a very, very strong reality that that's possible. It's not impossible.
Okay. Let's try to just talk about the Big Bang, unless you want to talk about evolution, or I don't care what we talk about. But
you pick the topic.
Well, I actually have my guests decide what to talk about, pretty much.
Okay, let's go with evolution.
All right, sounds good.
It's not my strongest, but I'll give it my best. I don't think there's a strong enough fossil chain to equivocate single-celled amoebas to, you know, multi-organ, very complex vertebrates like ourselves, mammals.
You're right that there isn't a robust enough fossil record to support single-celled life evolving into life like us, but there's huge amounts of other kinds of evidences. But, I mean, the fossil record, an objective reading of the fossil record just clearly shows that life on this planet is ancient and has gone through these epochs where vastly different kinds of life did not coexist together. That was understood in kind of the early-ish 1800s, because all those names for all those stratigraphical layers, or whatever you call them, the Ordovician, the Devonian, the Permian, the Precambrian, the Silurian, the Carboniferous, whatever, all those names were came up with in the 1800s before we could like objectively date things. And then when we discovered dating methods, it was like, well, I mean, if we were wrong about all these underlying assumptions, then this further scientific data will show that it's wrong. And all it did was confirm what we thought.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit to the fact that there could be geographical changes that have hidden some of the fossil records that might be linked to that. That's a very real possibility. At current date, given the exploration that we as humans have done on this planet, based on what we have available to us, I think that, you know, Darwinianism is kind of like, there's not enough information. I don't see, you know, monkeys becoming humans. I don't see the missing link. We see some like air quotes.
What? We have like, we have thousands of specimens. Oh, I have so many pictures on my phone. I'm probably not going to be able to find it.
Are you referring to Cro-Magnons
Denisovans and Cro-Magnon and Neanderthals, but also Homo erectus, Homo ergaster, Homo heidelbergensis, Homo naledi, Australopithecus. There's a few different types of those. Homo floresiensis, so on and so forth. Now, not all of those are like direct ancestors of us. They're cousins of us, but it's a clear depiction of, you know, hominids changing over time.
And someone in your queue just made a good point that they reminded me of it. I've kind of gone through this mentally as a, you know, as an exercise from, let's just say, what is it? They estimate the planet to be 4.5 billion years old, Earth. That's scientists' kind of best guess. So in 4.5 billion years, at the rate at which we see change now, to me, from even the first single-celled life forms to evolve even into multi-celled life forms would take a long time. But then to end up in, you know, the biodiversity that we have, like there's maybe a billion different species on this planet.
Biodiversity is thought to have been much higher at different points in Earth's history. You can look at extinction events and see that today we don't currently have a greater number of species than is estimated at different times in Earth. Like during the Permian extinction, 96% of all species went extinct. There are tons of types of animals like placoderms that just flat out don't exist on our planet anymore.
Yeah, if you take even the extinction level events that have taken place and then factor those into this kind of contiguous chain of evolution, it just doesn't make sense. The timeline does not jive. There doesn't seem to be enough time for because of time.
Okay, how long does it take then?
I don't know. It doesn't seem, it seems like evolution.
Well, then how are you claiming it could not have happened this fast, but we don't know how long it would take? How does that make sense?
Well, I'm giving a very, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm giving a very rough estimate as observing.
You didn't even give an estimate though.
As observing kind of the changes that I see. Like, I haven't seen or observed in my 48 years, not a single adaptation that we can observe where we've seen something go from X, or I'm sorry, from A to B, much less A to Z.
There have been, now I don't know what you mean by that, but there have been examples of that. Like, we have seen subspecies come about, like, basically before our eyes. What are they called? The great cactus finch and something else on Daphne Major. They just call it the big bird lineage or whatever. But typically when you bring up counterexamples like that, people say, no, I mean like a dog turning into a non-dog or something like that, which that would be very strong evidence that evolution is not true, because evolution doesn't say that a Pokemon type of transformation in the biosphere happens. That would be when creationists say, I haven't seen blank happen. That's like saying, yeah, I haven't seen anything fall up when I drop it either. That isn't a helium balloon.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
And I don't mean this to be, you probably do, because you seem like a very intelligent guy. Do you understand the difference between contiguous and continuous?
Contiguous means that things are, well, it means that things are connected. Like, the contiguous United States is the lower 48. And then continuous is just like a spectrum of events that are technically all connected. But now that I say that, that sounds like the same thing. So what are you specifically meaning?
No, because continuous, right? I can continue a race, stop for a day and rest, and then continue. Contiguous is in an unbroken chain, meaning it goes on.
Yeah, we don't have a contiguous fossil record.
Correct. And for me, like, going back and looking at the estimated, what is it, five extinction level events that have taken place?
Five major ones.
Five major ones. So five, considering the five major extinction level events that have taken place, to go back and look at them and go, okay, here's a starting point over every single time, and to think that we've now arrived at this is bizarre for me. I think even like vegetation during the asteroid that hit the Yucatan Peninsula, I believe like almost all the vegetation was wiped out as well. Is that accurate because of the sunlight?
I mean, plants died, but well, I don't know if you mean plants going extinct or plants dying, but I don't know. I mean, this is known, I think. I don't know it off the top of my head how like what the radius around the impact center where like literally everything was just vaporized is or whatever, but yeah, I mean, something like a nuclear winter set in, and that's a major reason why it was a global extinction instead of a regional extinction.
Yeah, I would say if there were no extinction level events from the day one, I still wouldn't, it'd be hard for me to buy the timeline, even with like leaps, but given that there's the perforations in between where they're realistically would have to start over for us to arrive at these, you know, deep, complex, multi-organ systems that work and seem to have design. For me, I can't get behind, like, this is just all, like, infinite regression and an expression of the universe. I think there's a God that's designed it. And evolution doesn't seem to jive for me.
But there aren't even any organs. I can't think of any recent organs that have evolved. Like, mammals... I can't remember the term, but the placental mammals like us, we've been around for 100 million years. It might be a little bit more than that. Like there isn't an organ we have that wasn't already around 50, 100 million years ago or something like that. We have,
we're
modified versions of our ancestors. That's how evolution works.
I agree, but I'm saying to get from the non, like one organ to two organs, three organs to four organs, right? That's where I'm talking about. Sure, I might agree with you. I don't know the lineage of how long we as mammals have been around, Homo sapiens, Homo erectus, but to get from that starting point again, or the starting over point, back to this. And someone argued with me once, which is it was a good argument. They said, well, if you look at the Industrial Revolution starting, what, in the 1800s-ish?
The 18th century, but yeah.
Sure. So you take that and then you go, well, look at the growth that we've seen from then till now.
Yeah, exponential growth. For animals like us, like in unicellular organisms, their genetics is extremely conserved because they don't do recombination. There is some horizontal gene transfer and stuff that happens, but for organisms that do sexual reproduction, there's like a potential for exponential change in, you know, genotypes and phenotypes or whatever. Which is consistent with what we see. I mean, we have life for 3.7 billion years, and only the last half billion years has it got really complex like we see today. Because once that potential is there, it kind of runs wild. And we see that same sort of thing happen with extinctions. Massive proliferation and diversification of the organisms that survive the extinction happens rapidly right afterwards. Because there isn't as much competition. Well, there's almost no competition since it was an extinction.